Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Fat Mascara. It's me, Jen, your intrepid beauty reporter. I am thrilled you're hanging out with me, even if you're one of those listeners who DMs me that you go to sleep to my voice. Honestly, if Fat Mascara is what you need to get your beauty sleep, I am here for it. Anyway, welcome to the Wednesday News episode. As promised, we have a repeat guest co-host coming next week. But before that, I had to get in one more of my beauty buddies. Please indulge me. He's sort of a repeat, actually. Today, we have Dr. Angelo Landresina. Yes, he's a board-certified dermatologist. Yes, he's at DermAngelo on TikTok and Instagram. But for today, let's all just think of him as our friend Angelo, who just happens to be able to give us real-time fact-checking and some Science Corner stuff. Also, by the way, we totally could have used you, Angelo, last week. My guest co-host Alex and I gave like a millisecond of credence to the idea that you can smell a baby's brain before their skull fuses, and that's why baby's head smells so good. I am so sorry. Obviously, that wasn't true. I corrected the record, but this is why we need you here. It also got me thinking about this whole notion of how the speed of the internet and our news cycle, it's helped make us more informed, particularly about beauty, skincare, the sort of scientific topics and wellness topics we veer into on this podcast, but also maybe more susceptible to misinformation. I know that's like a really wonky topic to discuss, but there was a bunch of beauty and wellness news this week that got me and Angelo talking about that fact. So it's a theme that comes up a few times on this episode, which I hope you're going to enjoy. We're going to have fun. We're going to hang. Oh, on Friday, I have such a good guest for you. I did such a great interview. Oh, that's exciting. But for today, let's get into it with my guest co-host, Dr. Angelo Landresina. Okay, Angelo, welcome back to Fat Mascara. But should I call you Dr. Landresina? Are we gonna do that this whole entire guest co-hosting
job? You can call me whatever you want. I'm just glad to be here.
Because last time you came on Fat Mascara, you were a full-time guest. We talked about dermatology things. We were completely professional. Did you have a jacket on? You might have even had a jacket on
name on it. I wouldn't do that.
But this time you get to be my guest co-host because I've seen you out and about in town. You're on the scene now. We're chatting. You've been busy. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah. Been very busy putting out a lot of evidence-based content on social media. And
yes, you have. Doing the Lord's work on our interwebs to correct science misinformation.
I mean, it really is bountiful. So if I'm not going to do it, who is?
It's true. It's true. We talked about that a little bit when you were my guest before, and people can go to that episode if they want to get more into that. Now that you're here as a guest co-host, I have to ask you just like chatty chatty. Like, I don't even know your backstory. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I'm still located in Brooklyn, New York now. came home. And yeah, I feel like within the circles I run in, it's difficult to run into another born and raised New Yorker. But when I do, those are my people.
Yeah. So in high school in Brooklyn, who were you? Did you get a superlative? Would people be surprised you're a doctor? Who were you? Theater kid? I don't know.
Yeah, I was a bit of a theater kid. I was definitely a nerdy kid. I got really good grades, which, you know, to become a doctor, it's a must. And my superlative was most likely to succeed. And
wait, were you really voted most likely to succeed?
Apparently. And I was like, succeed at what? I succeeded at something. I don't know if it's what they were
expecting.
Angelo,
in my notes, the way I wrote the question was like a leading question. I was like, were you most likely to succeed? Thinking, no way. But like in the back of my mind, I was like, that tracks.
Yeah. I mean, I think from a young age, I really had this blind determination to do whatever I wanted. I recently made a TikTok video where I talked about the difference between being Delulu and fantasizing, and how a lot of people are calling themselves delusional and kind of pathologizing having goals and wanting something for themselves. So like I've made an entire career out of fantasizing, and I am fully a doctor in my mid-30s and I'm still doing it. So
yeah,
I really endorse fantasizing.
Did you make up this term Delulu?
Have you never heard Delulu?
I'm not the most plugged in person. First of all, it's not fantasizing delusional tendencies. It's infantilizing them because yes. Delulu.
Delulu. Yeah. So a lot of people, I guess this is kind of Gen Z slang. They're like, oh, if you're being unrealistic, you're being Delulu. And I said in this video, delusion is really when you believe something that can be proven to be not true. But if you're just dreaming something up, whether it be a big goal or something that people tell you you can't really achieve, it's like, no, that's just fantasy.
It's so funny how vaguely therapy speak has become Gen Z speak, like the imposter syndrome. All these things that would only be in like a handbook of psychiatry back in the day are just like regular, as my friend likes to say, terms that the youths are saying. It's just part of their world.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in a way.
I just aged myself big time, didn't I?
You're like, back in my day.
We didn't have
Delulu. No, I really think, unfortunately, it's like a lot of what I see on TikTok is people trying to pathologize normal human experiences. And not everything really is that way. I watched an interesting movie called Bodies, Bodies, Bodies recently.
Okay.
And it's kind of a horror comedy, but it's written to be kind of a critique of Gen Z thinking. And I thought it was incredibly just like spot on about being in a hard situation, trying to like be PC about everything and trying to talk about everything in therapy speak and all of that. And I think it is helpful to be in touch with your feelings and to go to therapy, obviously, but it's just sometimes you don't want to get too caught up in it. And I think you don't want to use that line of thinking to really suppress good things within you, including fantasy.
Fantasy. Fan. The new Delulu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny that you bring up the Gen Z speak and the TikTok. I think there's this tendency to simplify things. And we're going to get into that a little bit, actually, with some of the news stories I want to talk about, just especially with beauty, just to break it down into a 20-second thing. And we got to give it a dumb name, which, oh my God, don't get me started. But you're somebody who makes some of this content, though you're doing it in a different way. Are you still having fun doing your content?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I would be lying if I'm not saying that sometimes it is a little bit of a slog just because I've spoken about everything. If it's out there, I feel like I've talked about it already.
With regards to skincare, right?
With regards to skincare.
Yeah.
And I think that I am branching out into like new topics and talking about different things, but sometimes actually I've come to the conclusion that I do have to retread some topics because I'm putting out hundreds of pieces of content per year, and a lot of people come to me freshly and will ask me some of the same questions. So I try to really inspire myself by following what's on people's minds.
Yeah. Well, as a service journalist for most of my career, I can tell you, though, then it gets like, but I already did that. I already said that. Please see this. Please see this video. So I know what you're talking about. But I was glad to see that you were mentioned in this Allure article that I loved that my friend Brennan wrote about dermfluencers. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, now I have one of the people that was spoken to in the article, one of the sources here on the line. Please go see the article. We'll link to it, by the way, if you haven't read it yet. But it was all about dermatologists who are making their career out of making content, not just servicing patients, or in some cases, not servicing patients at all, and just making content. Tell me everything that wasn't in the article that should have been.
Well, I mean, I think that I was pretty fairly quoted in the article, but obviously, there's only so much that you could get into in one piece. And I think to underscore a lot of what was said or like the finer points, kind of, yeah, there is a shortage of dermatologists for sure. But I don't think that we should really be concerned with a lot of these dermatologists are doing social media work. Why aren't they seeing more patients? Because, yeah. If you look at the field of dermatology, it's really only a handful of us that do content. I cannot think of one person who has completely stopped seeing patients that I know of. So I think all of us are either in the clinic or at least doing a telehealth practice.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But really, if we're worried about the shortage of dermatologists, it's really a shortage that has been created by government funding.
Yeah. And that being the thesis to back up just a little bit that like, okay, if we're putting people through, our society is putting people through medical school and all this work is going into that. And then they take themselves out of the medical field to dance on TikTok. Not like literally, but you know, that's not great. I used to call them the dancing derms. I'm sorry, when TikTok first started, like as Musical.ly, it was all the dances. So even the derms were doing the dances. So I call them the dancing derms. But yeah, to your point, it's more of an issue with the way that the medical education system is set up and the way that the healthcare system is set up, and not because, you know, what, 0.5% of doctors take a half a day or a couple days a week to make TikTok videos.
Yeah.
I wonder what percent it is.
And also, just to tell you, there are other pursuits that other dermatologists have that take them away from the clinic, whether it be consulting and other ways of working with the industry, research, which is important, teaching. And I mean, it's, I would say that you can't just prioritize seeing individual patients over everything else. I think that a lot of us provide a service by providing public education about all kinds of topics, especially for people who don't have access to a dermatologist, whether that be because of health coverage or because of access in their specific area.
The derm deserts are real. Yeah, especially in New York and Southern California, there's no shortage of dermatologists, but in many areas of the country, yeah, there are.
And I think part of the rationale behind where the government funding is going makes sense because there's also a shortage of primary care doctors. And if you opened up a bunch of new residency slots for dermatologists, is that going to take away from the amount of people that are going into primary care? And really, what's the balance that you want to hit? Because one isn't necessarily more important than the other, but you definitely need more primary care doctors than you do dermatologists. So I feel like it's difficult to boil down the issue into like, okay, this is the thing that needs to be done to serve more people. But what I would say is social media is not the reason that we have a shortage of derms. I think another thing that was, I was quoted about this in the article, but it would be a completely different article to really dive deep on this is, yes, those of us on social media do work with industry, but the relationship between dermatologists and skincare companies or drug companies goes back so far, like decades and decades.
It's just, it's much more visual now. We see it, so people are aware of it. But yeah, speak to that. Like, what do you mean?
There are so many different ways that physicians can work with industry, whether it be consulting, being on advisory boards, or even speaking on behalf of either a skincare brand or a drug company. That could be, you know, some of these companies have dinners for other doctors periodically where they'll get one physician who collects a speaking fee for speaking to everybody.
Angela, what's a speaking fee at a non-public facing dinner for like a board certified MD? Are we talking like $100,000?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Okay.
I mean,
we're talking five digits?
No, usually not. I mean, the order of magnitude is definitely different when you're like speaking to a room of 20 people versus if you're somebody with a TikTok following of millions. Yeah, you're probably making more money with your 15-second TikTok than that other doctor is, you know, speaking for an hour. But I think the basis of it is kind of the same. And if you really want to get down to like the nitty-gritty of it, there have even been studies where they've shown that doctors are more likely to prescribe a medication if the drug company gives them a pen.
Yeah, so a SponCon is one thing, but if a pen is going to affect how you're prescribing to patients, clearly there's other issues going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously, like, different countries have different regulations around this. In the U.S., we do have, like, a Sunshine Act where you can go online and actually look up how much money each individual doctor has made from pharma companies.
From pharma, though, and that's from Rx prescription. And I feel like elephant in the room is that a lot of these skincare companies that aren't prescription play in that, like, they have big prices and they're charging a lot. And there's no disclosure if they're paying dermatologists, right?
No, there's not. But I mean, at least according to the FTC guidelines, you can tell when an ad is there.
Yeah. Hashtag partner.
Yeah. Partner, hashtag ad. And now new FTC guidelines state that you have to verbally say that you're partnering with the company.
Is there a brand you would never do, or like a type of product you would? You're doing some branded content here and there. Is there something you're like, I would never do branded content for this?
I'm never going to say never, but one of the big rule outs for me is supplements.
Oh, I'm glad you said that because I want to talk about that Andrew Huberman. How do you say his name? That podcast, bro, that like blew up.
I was not aware of who he was until this week, so I'm going to guess Huberman.
Okay, yes, me neither, which says something about what circles we run in. But when we get to the news, just wait for it, everybody, because it's just like a fascinating story. So we're going to talk about that. Is there a brand you would love to create sponsored content for that you haven't yet? Doesn't even have to be skincare or beauty. I'm just curious, like, what would you die to, like, do SponCon for?
It would probably be fashion brands for me.
I was going to say, if we got you a Birkin, would you do it? Not that Hermes is doing SponCon.
Hermes is not doing SponCon, but if I could work with them, like, if they were going to be like, oh, here's a Birkin to add to my collection, I would be like, yeah, dream.
Wait, yeah. I'm sorry, what? You have a collection of Birkins?
Well, I have a collection of bags. I have two Birkins, but I'll take a third.
But a Birkin should be in there.
Yeah, well,
this is, don't be DeLulu. This is your DeLulu.
I'm going for Birkin number three because I already have two. But yeah, that's,
I love it.
That's my fantasy.
You know what? I want that for you. We want, you know what? You worked hard. You got yourself through medical school. Let's get you a third Birkin. Okay, before we get into the news, I'm curious. maybe in the skincare world, like what news or trend can you just not get enough of and or your followers can't get enough? Like you were saying, they keep asking for the same type of content. What is it that you're like, we just got to keep going on this? This is a good point to dive into.
I mean, it's not necessarily a positive point, but diet and skin, I think, is something that's really trending because there is no shortage of unqualified people going on the internet telling you how to heal your gut for clear skin.
Yeah.
I think specifically with diet and acne, I think maybe we touched on this the last time we spoke, but the data is very complex. And unfortunately, even a lot of my dermatology colleagues online try to turn the information into like little digestible bites in ways that kind of erase the complexity of it. For me, I think one of the concerns is that so much of this content around, you know, healing your gut and what you need to eat to have clear skin is really just promoting disordered eating more than it is getting people results with their skin. So I'm not saying that, you know, we're never going to reach a point where dietary recommendations are important or that there are not individualized dietary recommendations that might make sense for people in consultation with their doctor. I just think that for the most part, if you're trying to navigate it on your own, there are certain things that are not worth the time when your effort could be spent elsewhere. And I think that that's not really worth the time.
Okay, we have to get right into the news because my first item is going to touch on this, all right? Okay, Angela was just like, I'm the news music goes there. And I was like, yes. And then we're going to get right into Nutrition-ish because the first thing I wanted to talk about was, ties together everything we were talking about in the intro. And you know I love a segue, sexy water. Have you heard of sexy water?
Not until you brought it up, but everybody has to put a new name on everything.
It's true. But it's also this obsession with hydration online. I don't know why people think water is the cure of all evils. Like if I just drank more water and everybody's walking around with these. I just went to visit my friends in Jersey. Like everybody in their family had a huge cup. I don't even know if they were Stanley cups or whatever, filled with their water of choice with like little flavor packets and things. And okay, sexy water comes along and that's adding some supplement powders into your water. And this speaks to what you were talking about with the vitamins. What's your take as a doctor on all of this?
So I firmly believe that people should not just be randomly taking supplements of any kind. I think that anything you want to take in that realm should be run by your doctor, especially if you're on other medications or if you have any kind of medical conditions. Because do supplements work sometimes? Yeah. But because of that, they can also interact with medications. They could cause issues for people with certain health problems. So I think just like throwing a bunch of supplements into water and not knowing why you're doing that.
You're doing it to be sexy, Angelo.
There are other ways to be sexy. Come on. Like, do you really think somebody's going to come up to you and be like, oh, like you're drinking ashwagandha. That's so sexy.
Also, ashwagandha and cordyceps and mushrooms are like the least sexy. It's like a brown powder. Anyway, so in this one person who now there are many recipes, of course, of these waters, it's filtered water, lemon, cucumber, spearmint, a scoop of colostrum. Isn't colostrum the like the stuff the cow has for the baby or breast milk or something?
So colostrum is the first breast milk that comes in after you give birth. When they're saying they're putting colostrum powder, I'm like, from what animal?
I'm assuming a cow, but again, they might not know. Even with some of these cow powders, a lot, unless it's vegan, people don't know what it's coming from a shark. It's like often a shark. I don't know why. Anyway, also in here is chlorophyll, lion's mane, which is a mushroom, cordyceps, which is a mushroom, and mushroom multivitamins. What the hell is a mushroom multivitamin? Anyway, like, does anything in there strike you as like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's good for your, I don't know, your skin, your glow, your sexual health?
No, not that I could think of off the top of my head, but I think that article you're referring to brings up a really good point about chlorophyll, that it could deactivate certain medications.
Right, and this is what you were talking about. If you're not talking to your doctors, what can chlorophyll is just like greens powder, right?
Not necessarily. So chlorophyll is the pigment that makes plants green.
So it's like a phytochemical.
It's important for photosynthesis. Yeah.
And they extract it. And then what can it cancel out? What drugs can it cancel out?
I don't know off the top of my head about the interactions for chlorophyll. So I'd have to look into that. But what I will say is there are no proven health benefits. About last year, I think it was, people were talking about it on TikTok as like an acne remedy.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
There's no data behind that either. I would say people are a little bit too obsessed with hydration. There is no data out there that actually can put a number on how much water intake a person should have on a daily basis for optimal health. So even those numbers that we would hear as kids, like eight ounce glasses a day, like that's not based on any real science. What I normally tell people is you should drink enough. And if you're thirsty, you should probably be drinking water. But overdoing it, you could even like poison yourself by drinking too much water.
I've seen that with like marathon runners and things. I actually wrote about this for The Cut recently, and the guideline, again, all the doctors, of course, said the same thing as you, which is there is not a great way to do a guideline on this, but they were using urine color as the guideline, and like it should be almost clear. But like, I barely drink water. I'm walking around fine. I feel like if you're thirsty, drink. Like the body was like thousands of years of evolution to get where we are. It's not going to let you walk around just like chronically dehydrated. It gave you thirst as a mechanism to fix that, right?
Exactly. And you know what? I tell people, especially for skin hydration, for dehydration to have an impact on the way that your skin looks, like you're going to have other symptoms before that. You will feel shitty.
Right. And if you have dry skin, it's not because you're dehydrated. It's because the barrier is probably compromised or you need some sort of, right. Okay. He's nodding.
Yeah. There are all kinds of things that it could be before it's going to be
dehydration. This is so funny having you as my guest co-host, because usually I'm on people who have the same educational level as me on beauty. But every time I say something, I'm like, wait, I got to check with the doctor since I have a doctor on the other end. So if I say anything wrong, you better fact check me during this whole news segment. Okay.
Okay. I'll make sure I jump on you.
And to that point, pop science, because I don't want to be this. Pop science and its pitfalls. I want to talk about this Andrew Huberman article. Okay, so if people haven't read it, it was in New York Magazine. He is a huge podcaster who I had never heard of before this week. But apparently, the like optimization bros, I don't know what to call them, like people who like to make their life as healthy as possible and learn about health, men and women, love this guy. He's a Stanford doctor, but he's like a oculosurgeon. He studies the way our eyes work, like a neuroscientist that studies eyes. But he goes well beyond the scope of that on his podcast. You have to read the article because it's truly about how he's got a messy personal life and six girlfriends going on at once. And they all got together on a group text to talk about him. He sounds like, not to bring pop psychiatry in, but sounds like a bit of a narcissist. Did you end up looking into him after this news broke?
I did. You know, obviously, like there are a lot of salacious details in there. I had no idea who this man was, but
sorry to this
your
man.
Point. So I'm sorry to this man. I have no idea who he is. Yeah, he really is the Dick Cheney to my Kiki Palmer. But I really think that the issue here is more about pseudoscience.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. Yeah, tell me.
Apparently his credentials were overstated, but he is a neuroscientist. And I think that, unfortunately, the line of where you can give advice is a little bit murky sometimes. So obviously there's a lot of overlap in different disciplines, but I think as far as the recommending of supplements and things like, well, by this point in the podcast, y'all already know how I feel about supplements, but I think a lot of those recommendations, from what I hear, being based on low-level in vitro data or mouse studies, that's not good science to me. I also think that we kind of need to be wary. Like, sometimes, even me as a physician, I can interpret data and I could read journal articles, but I'm not going to be out here talking about neuroscience because my background is really in dermatology.
Oh, can I read a line from this article? Because I also just thought this was in the New York Mag article. It was just well written. Quote, how comfortable one feels with the science propagated on Huberman Lab, that's his podcast, depends entirely on how much leeway one is willing to give a man who expounds for multiple hours a week on subjects well outside of his area of expertise. I was like, oh, shots fired. His detractors note that Huberman extrapolates wildly from limited animal studies, posits certainly where there is ambiguity, and stumbles when he veers too far from his narrow realm of study. It's not just him, though. This is kind of what we were talking about with the TikTok thing before, and with people going for 30 seconds and trying to take an entire paper about a topic and like distill it into 30 seconds. Do you think we as Americans are gullible to science misinformation because of the way our media culture is?
Absolutely. I think that there are a lot of ways in which authority bias can influence people. Every day, I see that there are people with zero credentials on TikTok that get a lot of views and a lot of people believing in them just because, oh, their skin looks nice, or they say something with certainty, even though they have nothing to back it up. So if you take that to the next level and you get, hey, this person's a PhD scientist and they sound like they know what they're talking about.
Do you know how many press releases I get? So first of all, fact-checking standards as a journalist, I don't know if everybody abides by these, but with the Associated Press and things like that, you can't call someone a doctor unless they have an MD or DO, like use the honorific in line as I'm writing with the places I write for, because it does imply a medical doctor. However, I would say 50% of the times I'm pitched a doctor for an expertise in some subject matters, it might be a PhD. There's all these people that will start a business and it looks like vitamins and it looks vaguely medical and you look into their credentials and they have like a PhD in English. And good for you for getting a PhD. Like, wow, I know that takes a lot of expertise, but I think it's really misleading to call yourself a doctor when you're talking about vaguely medical stuff when you have a PhD.
No, I totally agree with that. It's about how it's presented. But on the other hand, I also think that, especially in the US, science literacy is not necessarily all there when interpreting this type of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's a hard nut to crack because being able to discern what is basically like junk research is very difficult, even for somebody like me who has to do it. Like, sometimes
I've been guilty of it where like afterwards another expert told me, oh, that paper, go look into the funding of X doctor whose name is on that paper and they got money from whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, for something like that, that doesn't always necessarily mean that it's true, or the research is not good because of funding. But like a good example of this, this is something I harp on a lot, is the whole rosemary oil for hair growth, which I've been saying forever makes no damn sense. And recently, Lab Muffin Beauty Science, Michelle, she did like a very extended YouTube video about how the study is crap. And meanwhile, you have doctors on social media saying that this is a viable treatment for hair loss. If you read the study, you could tell that it's crap.
Yeah. The thing is, it is so hard. So many times I've sat in a hairstylist chair or I've sat with girlfriends and you don't want to like get into that conversation because people weaponize facts, you know, or they like pick and choose the evidence they want to have an argument with you. And sometimes I hear people say things that are incorrect, but their personal experience backs it up. And people will take the personal, their own personal experience, anecdotal though it may be, with many other variables involved, and their friend's personal experience over a paper any day, and you know it's true. How many times have you been with a patient and they've been like, it worked for my friend, whatever the thing is?
Oh, yeah. I see it with patients. I see it in my comments section all the time.
And here we are. Like, there's something to public health. And we're like, I have a podcast where we talk about healthy topics. Like, I am probably guilty of what Huberman does, but not to that extent. But I also want to be the one who talks about it so people are peeling back the curtain and realizing what's going on and taking everything with a little grain of salt so that they can, yeah. But also, like, you don't want to send out people to do your own research. Well, that's why they come to TikTok, because they don't have time to read.
Yeah, they don't know what that means.
I'm like going on PubMed
do your own research is not a good thing to tell people. Well, even a well-meaning layperson who actually wants to search on PubMed, like so many of the articles that you can find from journals are behind a paywall.
Yeah. We journalists have our tricks for that. Oh, but I urge you, if you have not read just this article, just for the gossip fest alone, but I think the take that you and I wanted to talk about was the pop science of it all. And I think it's something that like more people need to be talking about. On that outside of your, me and my segues, on that outside of your area of expertise, let's move into this next story I wanted to talk about. It was in the LA Times, but it's recounting something that happens, not regularly, but it does happen. In 2020, a 28-year-old woman in California died as the result of liposuction surgery, which it turned out was performed by a pediatrician. I believe actually they had a family medicine background. But a nationwide study of doctors marketing themselves as cosmetic surgeons recently found that 12% of those doctors were practicing outside their scope of expertise. So this is a problem because this goes to, again, you just told me look for an MD and a DO. I found an MD. Great. I'm going to get a cosmetic procedure. What else do people need to know besides the fact that the person's a doctor? Should they be board certified in the surgery that and the specialty that they're going to them for, do you think?
I think it's a very complex issue. When it comes to something like plastic surgery, though, you want to make sure that they are board certified in plastic surgery.
Like
full stop.
Yeah. For something like significant liposuction, there are some dermatologists that do liposuction too and are very well trained. So I would say board certification in dermatology too.
Okay.
For that. Just because it's very invasive, I have seen cases, like I had a patient once who had severe complications from liposuction that was done by a family member who was an internal medicine doc who took a weekend course to learn how to do it.
Wait, that has layers because, like, that's your family just did that to you. Also, aren't doctors not supposed to operate on their own family members? Not for, like, cosmetic, but, like...
I think for cosmetics, the line is murky, but in general, you're supposed to, if there are other options, send your family members to other people.
Yeah. There was a line in the article, one of the doctors, she's the, Dr. Hawes, she's the president of the Aesthetic Society. Do you belong to any of these societies that are, like, outside of being board certified dermatologists, do you belong to any other certification bodies?
I'm a member of the American Society of Laser Medicine.
Yeah. Those are, but that has nothing to, I'm just curious now, that has, those societies have nothing to do with your board certification, correct?
No, they do not. So for me, for dermatology, our certifying board is called the American Board of Dermatology, which is separate from what a lot of us are part of, which is the American Academy of Dermatology, which is a separate professional organization.
So you could be not a quote-unquote board-certified dermatologist, but still be a member of the American Academy of Dermatology, right? They might not let you in.
I don't know if they have a membership type for people who are not derms. They probably do, but to be like specifically a fellow of the American Academy of Dermatology, they want you to be board-certified. And they don't give the board certification. This is where it's all really... sticky. So the American Board of Dermatology board certifies dermatologists in the U.S.
And so all these other practices, including cosmetic surgeons, have their own boards that certify people in those specialties, correct?
Yes. So there's going to be a board of plastic surgery specifically.
And that's what you should be looking for if you're getting procedures.
Yeah. Procedures like that. So I think... it's interesting in my field when it comes to cosmetic procedures. So I do a lot of cosmetics. There are a lot of either nurse practitioners or PAs or even RNs in some states that do minimally invasive cosmetics like Botox, filler, lasers. And some of them are very good because they've done their due diligence. They've studied really hard. They have a lot of experience. But it's difficult sometimes to tell how much experience somebody has. One of the things that I always say is that before you even learn how to do a procedure, you should be able to know what can go wrong and how to fix it. And I think this plays into this whole idea of people doing like these extreme plastic surgeries too. If you can't handle the complications or know how to avoid them, you shouldn't be doing the procedure.
Yeah, and that's what this Dr. Melinda Hawes was saying. She's the president of the Aesthetic Society. Sorry, I took us off track, but she said, I shouldn't be delivering babies, right? I'm not trained in that. Yet there are people who are gynecologists who do liposuction, and it's a real surgery. Her point being, I'm not trying to do things outside of my scope of expertise, and with cosmetics, because they've become so popular and because they are lucrative and because it's hard to be a doctor and make money and deal with health insurance companies, they add these aesthetic services into their practice. And sometimes, as we could see with this woman, the results are devastating. So if anybody out there is thinking about a procedure, especially liposuction, things can go wrong with liposuction, right? As far as plastic surgeries go.
Yeah. I mean,
this is not an eye lift or whatever.
If you do it the wrong way, you can perforate into somebody's bowel. Like you could cause like a major perforation into their abdominal cavity.
And so you want a surgeon there. If you have a pediatrician doing it and that goes wrong, they can't open you up and fix that immediately, is I think to your point, what you were saying.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that I will say also is even with the best trained people, even if you have the most credentials and you've been doing it for years, complications will happen. One of the things that one of my attendings told me when I was a resident is like, the more that you do, the more complications you're going to have, because sometimes it's not a matter of how good you are or what your technique is. It's just like things will happen. There are adverse events associated with any procedure. So you need to know how to handle it. You can't just say like, oh, I know how to do the liposuction. So I'm
no,
good.
You want someone who's seen the multiple things that can happen and has already learned how to fix them. Yeah. Oof. Mm-hmm. All right, let's lighten up. I took it real science-y. There was no science corner music, I think, just because like it was all science. But we're going to go somewhere light here. Guys, there's going to be something for sale in June 2024, and I have to bring it to your attention. It is called Victory Perfume. And let me just read you a little bit of the copy. It is more than a fragrance. This cologne is for the movers, the shakers, and the history makers. Angela, this is former President Trump's perfume, the Trump perfume. I sent you a link to the product page. Did you see it?
I saw the gold bottle. Like, obviously, this man needs a cash grab, and he needs it fast because he's in trouble.
It's $99, by the way, and I believe it is it has a base of leather and amber for a commanding presence. One thing that, this is what struck me about the whole thing, though. You saw the bottle. Okay, so the image, and I'll link to it. So as you can see, it looks like a Pez dispenser, doesn't it? Now that I'm thinking about it,
it's kind of. Let me look at this again.
Vertical bottle with President Trump's gold head on it. But my favorite part about when I found this, because I was, you know, I saw there was news about him selling Bibles, and one of them mentioned a perfume, and I was like, wait, what? You go to the page, if you order this $99 perfume, which is supposed to ship in June 2024, there's an asterisk under the photo, and it says, quote, the images shown are for illustration purposes only and may not be an exact representation of the product.
Oh, it looks like this is the men's version. There's a women's version, too, which is a curvy bottle that looks like an hourglass figure with a gold T at the top.
Oh, okay, because maybe the women don't want to have his face. But are you going to get this? Like, this is what I have questions about. If this is not the product, when have you ever seen a fragrance and a disclaimer under the picture, like, go ahead and order this, but you might not be getting this? Like, is this like a mock-up?
You know what? This site looks a little bit sketch to me. It's gettrumpsneakers.com.
It is. So I looked into the parent company of it, CIC Ventures LLC. Don't think I'm out here not doing my homework. It's a company that Trump reported owning in 2023 on his financial disclosure forms. And so that company has the same kind of license as 45 Footwear, which also uses Trump's names. It's likeness and image under a paid license. The license may be terminated or revoked according to its terms. So technically, he can say, it's not me. I've licensed my name for them to sell it. However, he owns the company, so he is still getting the profit. So I don't like that because I'm like, it's yours. If I buy this perfume, which, by the way, I'm absolutely going to buy, 100% am I sending $99 so I can see what actually comes in the mail come June. Do you think I shouldn't?
Oh, man. No, I don't want to give him any
yeah,
money.
Yeah, but like, that way I can see what actually comes so I can report on it. I promise to give $99 to all sorts of human rights charities as well. How about that?
Okay. Yeah, maybe that'll help. But I mean, never in my life have I not wanted to smell a fragrance this much.
Okay, you saw Elon Musk's burnt hair perfume, I imagine. Did you know about that?
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Actually really curious. I have an open mind. I want to smell this. Who's the perfumer that worked on this?
I wonder if the burnt hair fragrance ever shipped.
No, that did. I saw some people on YouTube doing and they get the product and they show it. Will this be the start of my YouTube career? I'm going to get Victory Perfume from Trump Ventures and do a YouTube about it. I think I might. Okay, I am not making any political statements by saying this. To me, actually, the bigger story is that this company is selling a fragrance that, like, you might not actually get. I'm not sure if I'm going to get this fragrance. I'm going to go order it. I might not get it. If I get it, it might not look anything like this, apparently CGI, AI'd image of what the bottle will look like. So we'll see. I'm going to keep people updated on how that goes. But that was the news. Let's go raise some ones.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Listen, there are so many skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, and you know I will try most of them. But how do you know your products are actually working? Some research to back up the claims. That's why Jess and I are all about Ritual. They created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted a clinical study to take the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual's Hyacera is now a part of my skincare routine, and I got in the habit of taking it every day by putting the cute little purple jar right next to my sunscreen. It looks nice on my vanity, and let's be honest, I love that. But once I stuck with the habit, I really noticed a difference in my skin. I am not the only one. In a clinical study, taking Hyacera for 90 days led to a 3.6-time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles as compared to placebo. And it led to a 2.9 increase in skin smoothness. I also like that they're easy to swallow. The capsules sort of taste like vanilla. They're not all weird and fishy like some other supplements. Plus, Ritual is a certified B Corp, something we learned about on a recent episode. And all their supplements, including the Daily Protein and their Sleep Bio Series Melatonin Supplement, are vegan, gluten-free, and made traceable. Do what Jess and I did. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off. Okay, it is time to raise a wand where we share a listener's favorite product. I'm so glad you're here because I got a letter from a listener. I understand, everybody. You don't want to come on the voicemail. It's scary to record your voice. So every now and then I will allow it. You guys write me emails all the time, but I'm going to read one instead of playing it because I'm curious what you think about this. So this reader, JF, says, "Hey, I discovered hypochlorous, as in hypochlorous acid, which we talked about last week, via a dental visit. Little did I know the exact same stuff I was rinsing with was the same thing in the Tower 28 bottle. And with that in mind, I bring you," and this is her raise one, "Briotech. It is way less expensive. I usually do a 2-bottle deal. They have other variations for cleaning, and I know they are probably the same, but I just can't. I don't mess with them. You can order the Briotech from Amazon on their site. Since I got this from the dentist, it is the one I stand by. I don't trust many quote-unquote Amazon brands because my skin is, well, mature. So I discovered I can't go too hard like I did when I first got it. It has been a miracle for keeping my HS in remission." And she speaks to Hidradenitis suppurativa. Did I say that right?
Hidradenitis suppurativa.
Oh my God, what if I hired you just to like be on call during all of my podcasts for when I mess up scientific language?
I'd do it.
Thank you. She says that's a skin disease that primarily affects women, in particular African-American women. And so she sprays hydrochloric acid on her trouble spots and areas that are known to be trouble spots. And this is like her huge raise a wand. She puts it on a cotton pad or Q-tip. I'm summarizing here. I'm sorry, JF. You're the best. I love you. She finishes with, "I am so not a health nut, but I went a bit crazy for a minute spraying everything and everyone with the product. A scratch on my cat, got it. My makeup brushes. It's fine for the synthetic ones, not the best for the natural ones. And then I caught myself on the cusp of effing up my skin barrier. So now I'm back to, quote, use as needed. I think you are doing a great job with all of your guests. FM never disappoints. Love, JF." Okay. The reason I read this is because I want to get into hypochlorous acid with you because my last guest and I were like, oh my God, it's the wonder product. It's like, fantastic, or Windex from my Big Fat Greek Wedding. That's the way she was writing about it too. But clearly this reader who has hidradenitis suppurativa?
Hidradenitis suppurativa. HS for short.
Let's just go with HS. Went a little bit overboard. Can you tell me, why is this the wonder thing? What is it and how do you actually use it as a doctor?
So I don't know if it's necessarily the miracle cure that everybody's making it out to be. And I think that in the public, it's really misunderstood how it works, because even among some doctors, there is some misunderstanding. For those of you who don't know, hypochlorous acid is essentially what you get when you put bleach in water. And the idea for using this for skin goes back very, very far. So in dermatology, it's a classic remedy for eczema. And typically the way that we would use it is to tell people to dilute bleach into like a full bathtub of water for their kids with eczema and have them bathe in it. And it works really well. Classically, it was thought that there is some dysbiosis, kind of like a imbalance of the microbes on people who have eczema just because their barrier's impaired. But what we ended up learning more and more is that its effect probably isn't as much from its antimicrobial activity, but is more because it's anti-inflammatory. A million years ago, when I was a med student, I helped conduct research where we actually looked at some of the inflammatory targets of hypochlorous acid and how they were expressed in skin that was an eczema lesion versus normal skin. And we found that, not surprisingly, a lot of those targets are really upregulated in eczema. So this is potentially a really good treatment for that. What I will say is people are touting it for acne, this is the first I've heard it used for HS.
Rosacea for me, I swear it helps with my rosacea.
Yeah, and I mean, it could be that it's having anti-inflammatory action.
Can you go overboard?
Yeah, I mean, it could be irritating if you use too much, but
let's put a big caveat here. Okay, bleach is one thing. There's sodium and chlorine, and then water has hydrogen oxide. You can't just mix like in your bathtub bleach and water to get hypochlorous acid.
Yes, you can.
So when they say a 0.02% of hypochlorous acid is the concentration here, that's actually a solution of 0.02% bleach in water.
They've worked it out where when you dilute it, the amount of the hypochlorous acid, that's the concentration you're getting in the final solution. That said, I do not recommend that people start mixing their own hypochlorous acid at home.
You know that's where this is going. We cannot let that take off on TikTok. Then we're going to have people out here with bleach on a cotton pad bleaching their face.
Yeah, but I mean, even the bleach bath that I was talking about, make sure you're talking to your doctor, to your dermatologist before you do that so that they could give you thorough instructions about measurements and things like that. So yeah, I would not recommend trying to make your own hypochlorous acid solution at home. But to the writer of this letter, to their point, there are a lot of options out there that aren't just Tower 28 has one, Prequel has one, but there are a lot of solutions out there that they make as like eyelid wash or for other purposes. There's some that are used as skin disinfectants that actually some derms use in place of alcohol in their practices to kind of disinfect the skin before procedures. So, I mean, there are a lot of uses for it.
Yeah, the one this person recommended, this Briotech, is also just a less expensive than the Tower 28 or even the Prequel. It's just a version of that.
Yeah.
But professionally made still.
Yeah, and another thing that I would say is that we're probably not clear on what dosing schedule or what concentration should be used for different conditions or if it even helps.
I feel bad now. Last week, me and Charisse were just like, we're spraying it on everything. We're putting our brushes. We're putting it on our faces. But this is not the way to go, is what you're telling me.
Well, it's just there's a lot that we don't know.
Yeah. This is what you can't get into a 30-second TikTok. This is why you need a beauty podcast so you can talk about this. Because clearly, everybody's out here getting really excited. And it might not be the wonder spray that I thought it was. Am I going to mess up my barrier if I keep using this Prequel Universal Skin Solution Dermal Spray?
Hard to say. I mean, what I will say is it's probably not something that you should be using, generally speaking, that people should be using like constantly throughout the day.
The way I was using it was after cleansing, almost like you dried off and then like an essence almost, if you will, just like as an in-between the skincare and the cleanse.
That's how a lot of people do it. I mean, also, it could oxidize certain other skincare ingredients like vitamin C, so.
If you put it on very quickly afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I got to slow my roll on hypochlorous is what you say. However,
potentially. It's just this, like with so many other things in skincare and personal health, there's not like a cut dry answer. There's a lot we don't know.
Yeah. But I do appreciate JFA telling us about the cheaper version from BrioTech and just bringing up HS, which I'm sure other people suffer from and may not even know. So they should head over to the derm to figure out what's going to work for them, even if it's not hypochlorous acid. Okay, if you ever raise the wand, I love you, JF, but I would love to hear your voice. So call us, 646-481-8182. Leave me a voice message. I will not pick up the phone. Everybody gets so nervous. By the way, you can also text that number. I figured that out a couple months ago because there was like something in the little voicemail box. I was like, what is that? And someone was over here texting me. So if you're listening to the show right now and have thoughts, text them to me, 646-481-8182, or send me a voice memo, info@fatmascara.com. Okay, it is time to raise our wands. You are my guest. I want to know what you want to raise a wand to. I want to know a couple things you want to raise a wand to.
I have a collection.
You have a collection. Okay. You want to just go into it or can I just tell me everything?
Yeah.
What do you want to raise a wand to?
Okay. So you asked me for something fragrance, right?
Yes.
I'm burning a candle right now. So me with candles, I always forget to burn them. So I don't go through them that quickly. I've been working on this one for months now. This is Hellbound Heart from The New Savant. They are, I believe, New York-based, queer-owned, and so I was like, I want to try it out. This scent has charred wood. It says roasted blood. I think this is Halloween theme. That's why.
They do some seasonal candles. Yes.
Warm amber and bottled tears. What it smells like is good, spicy wood, and you're getting like a little cut of the citrus in there. And it's just very pleasant. I was comparing it to, I have Diptyque's. Oh my God. My French has to get better. Feu de bois.
Yeah, I knew where you're going with that.
Which
yeah.
is wood fire. And that's like literally a campfire. This is a little bit more, I think, less in your face, refined, like a nice little blend.
A fresher feu de bois. A lighter feu de bois, a more fun feu de bois.
Yeah. So also on fragrance, I have here After Sun by Vacation Brand. If y'all aren't aware of Vacation, they're a very fun brand that their main focus is sun care and sunscreens. They make a great, like daily SPF, they make a great sunscreen foam, kind of.
The Ready Whip one, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a can of Ready Whip, but it's a great body sunscreen. This is supposed to be the scent of their, I guess they have an After Sun product, and they deal a lot in nostalgia. So everything that they do is supposed
Clearly, Angelo didn't listen to last week's episode of
Really?
The fragrance developer from Vacation was on our show. Actually, 2 weeks ago, I should say.
Oh, I
no,
have to listen
I love
to that.
This. It just means you're one of us. You're part of the fam. You're friend of the pod. The guy that developed that fragrance was my guest 2 weeks ago, Carlos Hubert.
So, to that point, they do work with an actual, like, nose for their scents. They have another scent that smells like the scent that's in some of their sun care products, which smells like being at the beach in the 90s, specifically.
Yeah.
And this smells like an elevated version of, like, the aloe vera gel that you would put on after you got sunburnt. It's like, it definitely has that aloe scent, but there's, like, florals in there.
So it's Vacation. Which one? Because there's two. This is the green one. What's the name of it again?
This is After Sun.
After Sun.
So I guess this is the smell of their After Sun product versus their original fragrance is, like, it smells like Hawaiian tropic tanning oil, but like taken to the next level.
I have to have a party someday where all the friends of the pod come together, because not only was the fragrance developer for that on the podcast in the past, Rodrigo Flores Rue, the perfumer, the nose who did that scent, who is so fun, you would love him. Like, you would all get along. I just feel like a friend of the pod party would be insane. Anyway, you could tell him. Oh, I'm going to pass along the message that you love it. Okay, moving on. What else do you want to raise a wand to?
I have here The Ordinary's Retinol 0.2% emulsion. This is a new product from them. For those of you who don't know, retinol is different from retinol because basically retinol has to go through a few different steps within the skin before it gets to its active form, which is called retinoic acid. So putting tretinoin on your skin basically skips all those steps. It is the active form. Retinal is one of the intermediate steps between retinol and tretinoin. So it's available over the counter because it's technically not a drug. And it is thought to be potentially a little bit more effective than retinol. Jury's still kind of out. It checks out theoretically, but there have not been a lot of head-to-head studies. The reason I like this one is that this is pretty much as high of a strength of retinol as I've seen on the market. There are other brands doing it, but not really for this price point. The cosmetic elegance of it is really nice, and I found it to be non-irritating. However, I am really accustomed to retinoids.
You got that rhino skin. That's why
yeah.
Jess is like that. I couldn't handle it. Isn't there some thinking, too, that when you're putting on retinol, because it doesn't have to go through those steps, some of the irritation and inflammation caused is from that process of going through the steps? So if you're using the really weak retinol with an O that has to go through three or four steps to get to retinoic acid, that in that process is causing irritation? Or is it just that it's just more potent and that's why you like it?
I think the thought behind the tolerability aspect, which I also think is not fully fleshed out, is just that if it gets consumed a little bit faster, you're not having some of those intermediaries just hanging out on your skin causing issues. Because anytime that you have a chemical process and reactions that need to happen, a lot of them happen forwards and backwards too.
So if you have multiple chemical reactions because you're switching through from retinol to the retinoic acid, you're leaving behind byproducts, you're going backwards a little bit, and this is all firing up potentially some inflammation, whereas a retinol maybe not. But also, you're getting that potency, looks like. What was the percentage on that?
It's 0.2%.
Yeah. So if someone can handle retinol and is ready to step up to like, that would be almost like, I bet you get like prescription-like results with something like that.
Hard to say, but one interesting thing that we're learning about retinol and retinoids, there was one study that came out within the last year or so where they looked at a small group of people that were all using different strengths of retinol, actual retinol, and they ended up finding that after a certain amount of time, people averaged out at the same endpoint as far as anti-aging parameters. It's just that people who used higher strengths got there faster.
And then they stayed there. I imagine once you get there, it's like, okay, this is the best anti-aging you're going to get. Now stay on the...
From retinol specifically.
And then you have to keep using it, right, to keep those benefits.
Yeah. But I mean, it's hard to extrapolate that to all retinoids, but it's an interesting thing to think about. Okay. I have one more product.
Tell me.
And I have to talk about this, and it's so random, but lip SPF is difficult because you really need to like apply a good amount of it. And most of them, I'm going to be honest, taste awful.
Yeah, but you want it. I got my first age spot and it's on the edge of my lip because like, yeah, you eat off the SPF there. I'm thinking the reason. So I agree with you. What do you have there?
Okay, this is only SPF 20, which unfortunately it's difficult for them to get a really high SPF formula, so it's better than nothing. This is Revlon Kiss Balm.
Is it those fruity ones and they come in all the different fruits?
Mm-hmm. This one is peach.
I love that stuff. It tastes so good.
Yeah, so it looks like a little crayon. The texture is really like chapstick.
It's a little I would say it's a little glossier than chapstick, no?
Maybe.
All right, he's giving us a demo.
It has a peach flavor to it, this one. It comes in different fruits.
No color payoff. It's very sheer.
Yeah, very sheer. Does not taste like crap and has SPF 20.
That's his razor wand. Does not taste like crap. Thank you for that eloquent razor wand.
Well, no, I take this with me everywhere now, and I think I'm not sure exactly about the price point, but it can't be more than like $5.99 or something.
I was going to give it a $6.99. I feel like we're on the prices right.
Maybe $6.99, but like for that price, come on.
You can have one in every bag. All two of your Birkins.
Well, yeah, I only have the one, but it's been going from Birkin to Birkin, so.
He's a high-low kind of guy. You're very much like me, you know what I mean? Like, we're going to have that Birkin, and we're going to put the $6.99 SPF 20 lip balm in it. I love that.
When you're good, you're good.
That's
you know?
The Brooklyn in you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love that. All right, before we go, I have to raise a wand because I'm excited about this one, actually. I told you I was going to raise a wand to something different. I changed my mind because my friend has a company called Hugimals, and they're stuffed animals that are weighted, like their arms are weighted, and they weigh about like 5-6 pounds. She invented them because she wanted to have a weighted blanket for anxiety, but it was too hot. And then she wanted her husband, like, or her partner's arm on her. And that was like, you can't make a person come with you everywhere. So she invented these Hugimals because they have deep touch pressure, which stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system. So you get that rest and digest or whatever, you know, the not the flee and scared feelings. Well, she just partnered with Mariska Hargitay to do this special version of her Hugimal. It's a heart and it's lower cost than the others. And a percentage of the net sales goes to the Joyful Heart Foundation, an education and advocacy nonprofit that works to transform society's response to sexual assault, domestic violence, and child abuse. So instead of a cute little Hugimal, it's a cute little heart, and it's 5 pounds and weighted. Have you ever used like a weighted therapy blanket or anything?
I did. I thought I would like it because I'm the type of person that I always need to have some sort of cover on me to sleep, but it didn't work out. I don't know why. I felt like I couldn't breathe.
That's why she invented these animals, because you can, it's almost like, when people pick them up, it's like picking up a dog, a cat, or a baby. Like, you get that instant, like, oh, it's just like a nice weight, but it's not suffocating. So she did it in a heart shape to support the Joyful Heart Foundation. And I kind of love that. So I want to raise a wand to it.
That's a great cause.
Isn't that
great? I should get one.
I'm going to get you one to say thank you for being a wonderful guest co-host / real-time fact checker / delightful neighbor in Brooklyn.
I try.
Yeah, go get your beauty sleep, and we'll see you next week.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us, or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.